This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Brownouts, blackouts, it's in the headlines in Europe, in the United States, in California, as warning for the high cost of electricity and energy and the inability of certain places in the U.S. and in Europe to maintain electricity supplies given the upset in Ukraine and at the same time the adjustment, transition of the American economy to renewable futures. I welcome Professor Richard Epstein, a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution. He teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago, writing for the Hoover Institution in its Defining Ideas column about FERC, F-E-R-C, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. The FERC is proposing now, under a very long title, which I'll read, Building for the Future Through Electric Regional Transmission Planning and Cost Allocation and Generator in Connection, end quote, proposing rule changes, or right now, notice of proposed rulemaking that can combine the shortfall of certain areas of the U.S., say in Connecticut or California, with the bounty, theoretical bounty, of electricity and energy in a region. Richard, a very good evening to you. I give you an example that I draw from your essay at Hoover Institution and expand it from my reporting over these last months. California. California has told its citizens, especially in L.A. County and Orange County, very populous, very prosperous, to expect brownouts or a disruption in energy supply over the course of the heat waves that are coming on. In climate change or not climate change, it gets hot in the summertime in Southern California. At the same time, we have unusual facts to establish. For example, Lake Mead, the reservoir behind the Hoover Dam that provides electricity for the region, is at an all-time low. Orville Dam in the north is at a low or an all-time low. Both those are generating, hydroelectric generating. However, the water reduction means that they're on alert that they may not be able to keep up their rates. At the same time, we have from California news that a desalination plant proposed on the coast of California has been rejected by authorities in California. At the same time, we have information, or we believe we have information, that California is discouraging building homes with natural gas anytime after a certain date. I believe it's 2025, and mandating the switch of the automobile fleet from fossil fuel to electric sometime in the next years. And in other words, California is making rules about energy consumption because it wants to make this transition to renewable. You give the case that California will benefit with the notice of proposed rulemaking by FERC. How will California benefit by this new regional plan? Good evening to you.
Yeah, hi. This plan is a real monster, and it's very, very difficult to explain its provisions. But the key ones are this, which is that every time you wish to make a decision about how you are to develop your nuclear power or your other forms of power, fossil fuel power, in your own state or your own region, you have to take into account the effect that it's going to have on every other state with which you're connected. So the country is divided into a bunch of areas which are multi-state. And if you're in one of those areas with California and it is decided that it has to going to cut down on all of these things, you have to take that into account. Lord knows how, when you make your own decisions for how to run your energy type system. So what happens is, it's not that you just have to talk about it. They're very vague talk, but I think they mean it, about the fact that you have to secure their agreement. Well, in order to decide how you're going to develop power in any one particular area, you have to get the consent of everybody else. It means that outliers like California, which are engaged in what I regard as quite suicidal sorts of activities, are going to be able to slow down your particular plans and to reduce your ability to adapt one way or another. It also means that you are probably going to be forced to supply them with some degree of energy at a price which will be determined by God knows whom, but perhaps FERC itself. And these prices, in fact, could either be above or below market. And if they're dictated by FERC and it turns out the market is high and the price that they set is low, there are going to be massive shortages and distortions throughout about the entire system. The motivation of this, I think, as Commissioner Danley said in his dissent on this thing, is if they talk about constantly changing the mix of available sources, what they really want you to do is to make sure that when you build your grid out under the watchful eye of FERC, you're going to include prominent basically solar energy and wind energy components in the overall plan. This is, of course, under the myth that somehow or other sources of energy that aren't fossil are clean, whereas fossil energy is very, very bad. It also turns out that in order to do this, you have to build these various facilities, batteries of one kind or another, and these require extensive amounts of mining to take place, often under horrible conditions. So if you're looking at the system top to bottom, beginning to end, it's not the wonderful solar energy panels in place. It's everything that before and after that turns out to be so very expensive with respect to this system. So I think what's really going to happen is this is going to be challenged. I think there are very strong legal challenges that could be made to this particular system, because every historical system of rate making bears no relationship to the kinds of things that they're trying to do here.
The question I have is a practical one. California has made a decision to close down its final nuclear energy power generating plant. That means under these proposed changes, regulatory changes, I think, I'm reasoning, a state that is in California's region, having no authority to vote yay or nay for closing down that plant, has to make up for the lack of for the loss of electricity with its own rates and its own power generating. Is that correct, Professor?
I think the answer is yes, and I use the word with a certain degree of hesitation. One of the things that you do is you start with a notice of proposed rulemaking, and you put out a very detailed proposal. But what happens is between that proposal at the level of generality that it's dealing with and the specific decisions in particular cases, there are thousands of different ways that you can go. So it turns out, if you think about, you're at a given point and there's a big circle and you could go 360 degrees, they put this regulation in place, and what they do is they knock out 240 degrees of the circle. Well, you still have a very large arc and you could go this way or that way, and what they've done, of course, is they've knocked out the most sensible alternatives and left in place the most dangerous one. So how far they will be able to go, nobody could say. Look, there is a recent analogy. There's the BSER, the best system of emission reductions, a very occult question. And what happened is the Biden administration attempted to say that in order to reduce emissions from a plant, it's not that you have to put a safety valve or a filter on the particular operation, but what you have to do is to reorient the entire distribution of power sources in your region so as to allow for solar energy and wind energy to replace what's going on. And the Supreme Court in this West Virginia case is likely to strike this down. Well, my view is this is a similar kind of, shall we say, assertion beyond all reason of a set of powers you don't have. The way rate making always used to work, and I put the past tense, is that what you do is you get a plant, and it's got a monopoly, and at least with electrical energy and so forth, the innovations aren't enormous, and the ability to switch across regions is always costly. So you put your plan together and figure out what rates you want to charge, and then what the government comes back in and they say, is this a competitive rate, or is this going to be a monopoly rate? And so what you do is you battle between Scylla and Charybdis. On the one hand, if they reduce the rate so well, it's confiscation, and the other thing is they raise the rate so high, it's monopoly protection. And the system of rate regulation was always designed to make sure that the rates fall somewhere between those two particular boundaries. But in this particular case, they're not vetoing the rate. What they're doing is they're telling you how to put the whole thing together. And if you start looking at the way in which the statute is worded, what it says is it's supposed to veto any rate charge or classification if it turns out it doesn't meet these requirements for competitive rates. But that's not what they're doing here. They're not telling the rate company to start going. What they're telling you, if you want to tell you how you're supposed to put this rate into place in the first place, and what they're doing is they're making, they're making you take into account everything that takes place everywhere else, and they're making everyone else do it exactly the same way. Whereas in the history of rate regulation, it was exactly the opposite. What you had had to do and to make the system tractable was to have a set of rates such that for the rate year, the system operated at a respectable profit. You were not allowed to sort of offset income from outside sources against the income that you get. In this particular case, you were not allowed to postpone expenses or revenues to future periods and then try to play catch up and down the road. And so the system was trying to put this thing together so as to have coherent, functional, small units of rational decision instead of this sprawling monster that the government seems to want to put into place. So I'm reasonably confident that there will be fairly intense administrative law challenges similar to those that took place in the West Virginia case. I mean, I've read that particular statute and those things. I regard the Biden administration and the Obama administration before them as living in fantasy land. These statutes were drafted with a great deal of care. They're not perfect in many ways. In fact, I've criticized them on structural grounds. But by the time the Biden and the Obama people have gotten finished with them, they're utterly unrecognizable as to their original design.
Another example, West Virginia, from the coal face in West Virginia to a coal-fired electric generating plant is 12 hours, extremely efficient. And the people of West Virginia enjoy the electricity, and so does Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Virginia. Our surrounding area enjoy the fact that West Virginia is prosperous. Under these rules, theoretical, is it the power of Pennsylvania or Virginia legislature to say that West Virginia cannot supply energy from a coal face, or that we're going to derive energy from the coal face that we denounce in our legislature as promoting greenhouse emissions?
You're basically, unfortunately, you're being perfectly sensible. That is, I mean, we have no idea what's going to be done, because if you're required to get agreement to somebody else, it turns out that they're entitled to set the terms and conditions under which their agreement is given. And so just put it in the following way. You're sitting there in West Virginia and Ohio demands that you do one thing, and it turns out that Pennsylvania demands that you do another, and they're utterly inconsistent. You can't satisfy both of them. What are you supposed to do? They never answer those questions. What happens is you read this report, and it has a kind of gauzy incoherence that's associated with its operation. Now, the way in which you want to write any serious report that proposes a serious institutional change is to come up with a very specific analysis of where it is that the current system is broken down. And then once you could figure out where it is broken down, you try to put together a system which tells you how you could correct it without introducing other flaws of equal or greater magnitude. But if you could read this entire thing through and you have no idea of exactly what it is that is wrong with the current system of rate regulation that requires this massive change, a basic promise that, oh, we're going to make this thing more efficient than it's ever been, this is the quintessential form of cheap talk. You don't know what they're going to be able to do. So, I mean, if you want to go back and take what happened in Santa Barbara and Lake Cayuga back, you know, 50 years ago, we've sort of had catastrophes of major forms out there. And somebody said, well, is this a system? Can we really drill in shallow waters in Santa Barbara Harbor and so forth? And if not, where do we want to go and how do we want to do it? You have a blunder. You can start to focus your inquiry. But in this particular case, the only blunders that we have are incipient ones, namely that if we don't change anything and we allow California to go along its merry way, it will essentially have blackouts and brownouts. It will then require energy to come in from other places. What's going to happen, unfortunately, is they'll probably have to rev up dirty coal plants because they're constantly resisting the introduction of new plants. Look, you mentioned desalinization, and let me say this. You take a place like Israel, right? They're up against it. And it's a desert. Well, what do? They have a long coastline along the Mediterranean Sea. They start desalinization plant. And what it does is it immediately says you don't have to worry about having political fights as to how you're going to allocate the sparse waters that come out of the Jordan River, right? It's a big, big improvement. And what is so crazy about these people in California is if anybody comes up with a proposal to expand the productive pie, they're always finding a way to get rid of it. The way I like to put it is this. You have a current system which is oozing and geezing. It's really quite terrible. And it's working at the level of 20. And somebody comes forward and says, we'll replace it with another system which has the same degree of productivity, but a total social cost of 5. And so we're going to gain 95. And the government comes back and says, no, no, no. We've looked at this very closely. And we're not going to let you go to 5 unless you're going to go to 3. So you fight over two units, and you let 95 units fester, and constantly have to patch up old plants that are completely dangerous. The effort on the part of the people in this business is they're trying to kill the fossil fuel system, because they think once you start having the pipelines opened up, you'll never be able to shut it down. The answer is, if you don't open the pipelines up, you'll have an immediate disaster of monumental proportion. And by the way, we know that the improvements in fossil fuel technology are relatively continuous and have been constant in every relevant dimension. And so what you want to do is to encourage the technologies that work and get rid of an elaborate system of cross subsidies, which will allow the craziest state in any given reason to dictate in large measure the policies of everybody
else. Professor Richard Epstein, writing at the Hoover Institution about proposed rulemaking by the federal government. We're going to turn to the federal government and the Supreme Court next. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.